The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Asia, Eastern Europe and Central Asia. That's a little bit about my background. My next point was to go to this. How did I get my job at the bank? My first job as a summer intern, should be an official summer internship program. So for anybody interested in the World Bank, if you go on the website, you should see different programs being explained better than I could. But at least 7 years ago, there was an official summer internship program. You were just required to put your CV in, and based on your interest, you could be contacted. I also did a lot of networking through professors, adjunct professors that were teaching classes here, and they were also working at the World Bank. I had a couple of interviews, and I got the first consultancy in the area of legal and judicial reform. So that is how my legal background was a good fit with that opportunity in the Latin America region. And then after a while, I broadened my horizon. I was interested in larger anti-corruption and governance issues. So I started working on a little bit with projects providing technical assistance, capacity building to ministries of finance across Latin American countries. At that time, it was very clear to me that my legal background was very helpful, but not enough. I mean, the World Bank, although we are broadening our horizons, it's still the place or the heaven for economists, right? So I really needed some exposure to that. So I came back to the school. I started an SJD program under leadership from Professor Daniel Bradlaugh, and I took some courses in the main campus in economics, finance, macroeconomics, international business transactions, and I found that very useful. I got a staff position in Africa region, working in completely not legal issues, regional integration. Then I got in the Young Professional Program, and now I'm back to my, what I call, core expertise, so back to my governance and anti-corruption interests.
Now, I'll ask the question then, which is a million-dollar question. Where do we find things advertised? As far as consultancies, I find it difficult to ask me where I find the consultants that can go to the other end of the position. So, do you want to address that a little bit?
Sure. So, this issue of working in international organizations, I think all and each of you should really think whether to decide whether you want to work in an international organization first, and then also decide what kind of role you would like to play there, because you have to imagine these are huge organizations. You can do a million things there, so just thinking, oh, I want to work in an international organization is not necessarily helpful. You have to go a little bit deeper. Are you interested in what exactly, what type of issues? Are you interested in education projects? Are you interested in tech reform? Are you interested in governance and anti-corruption? Do you want to be a lawyer for the World Bank, or do you want to work in project management and lead or do research? Or so what kind of role would you like to play in an international organization, and whether the international organization is a good fit for you? And then related to that, how to get that job in the international organization? And I think for all these questions, the best way to go about it, the best way to get that staff position or best way to understand if you're really a good fit for the organization or the organization is a good fit for you is by doing, starting, you know, small. I find doing an internship for example, taking, you know, you can do a summer internship or you can do an internship for credit. I don't know if that has a special name. For credit, I mean, it's a good way. I think it's a potentially easier way to get inside the organization, to learn a little bit more about the different opportunities inside, and to really come to a conclusion whether you want indeed to be there, because you might not want to be there. I mean, I think it's a great place to work in, and I'm also going to advertise that. But I mean, you know, it's a very complex environment. I think it's different from private sector. My colleagues might agree or disagree. It's a lot of travel. Right now, I have two small kids. For me, it's very difficult to balance family and work-life balance to manage. All these questions, I think, you can easily find an answer by trying for an internship. Of course, you can also access the good old-fashioned Job World website to see different staff positions and apply for them. You can try to learn more about different programs such as JPA, JPO, YP, Legal Professional Associate in the legal department. And so on. You are right, Adriana, there are consultancies within the World Bank that not all of them are advertised outside. So sometimes, you know, what I was told, network. The more you participate in events, the more you talk to people working inside, the more you find out about the different opportunities that would not necessarily be advertised in a website.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was another question because everybody looks for their consultancies and they're not usually advertised. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for the
invitation.
I'm thinking about breaking up the Nigel speech into four different subheadings. So, first, my educational background, and secondly, work experience that was acquiring. The third, talk a little bit about the daily life of a lawyer in the IMF, so give you a little bit of flavor for the issues. Fourthly, I would like to address these questions. My educational background, I studied, as Adriana already said, in Austria, so I studied in Austria, did my law degree there, I did 1 year abroad in France for the Erasmus program. Then I had a JD and a PhD from Austria. Then I came here to do my master's degree at Georgetown University. I focused primarily my education here at the end on financial law, corporate law, corporate finance, which later on proved to be very useful for what I'm doing right now. Basically, my educational background. So, the work experience, I worked for a couple of years back in Austria. So after we met, then I went back because I wanted to get admitted to practice in my home jurisdiction, which is a little bit a difficult task because you need to work for at least
a long time. Right?
You need to work for at least 5 years in Austria in the Austrian law firm to get clerkship and lots of other things. And then you can sit for a bar exam. So you need to do this 5 year training. So I worked for first for a law firm in Brussels, and then for a law firm in Vienna, which did a lot of work in Eastern Europe, so I did mostly M&A, corporate and extraction, and this kind of competition law. Then I wanted to do something else after being admitted in Austria. I applied to a couple of positions and also to the IMF. And it worked out, so I got the position, I just applied and got the position. Now I've been at the IMF for over 3 years, 3.5 years.
So you applied to a plan?
Yeah. Not just a cold letter, just sent back a resume.
So they work.
They work, yeah.
I've never known that somebody reading those things. Okay, yeah. Great, okay.
That was actually pretty interesting because I got not immediately a reply, I waited a couple of months.
Months?
Yeah, months. And then a couple of months later, suddenly I got an interview and I was called. So what I'm doing right now is like Oksana already indicated, working in international organization is a little bit different from private practice. Because even though the adjustment process that one has to go through, because first it's much more hierarchical, much more structured than in a law firm where you just work for 5 hours. Because the type of work is very different. Because obviously law firms are very client oriented, which you know exactly what you're doing for working in the team, they're working for a client. Whereas that's not that clear sometimes. Obviously also the international focus is very different. It's the idea of 186 members, so it's a worldwide organization, so it's very diverse. And one day you work on Tajikistan, the next day you work on Nigeria, the third day you work on, I don't know,
Canada. It's a great background, right?
Like, it's very diverse in that respect. And I work in the legal department at the IMF, and we do mostly the lending operations. Now, since the crisis, much more, before it would be nice. Low-income countries and middle-income countries, and also high-income countries, and Iceland. And I do a lot of financing operations within the funds. You may have seen the funds that got additional resources bilateral from countries, North European, Canada. One of these sort of transactions, also financial transactions within the IMF, because there was a huge SDI, a major SDI since currency, reserve currency that was created in the 60s. And there was for the first time in, I think, 20 or 30 years, an SDI allocation, which created efficient liquidity to address the crisis. Obviously, the crisis really changed dramatically our work, because suddenly we had an explosion of our work. It continued to be the same amount of people, and suddenly you had like, you said, I think, like 20 problem countries, which is the
right
amount of people. That's good news for us. Well, we need
people to work on those things.
That's true. And also work on governance issues. Huge push to change the governance structure of the IMF, not only in terms of DODA, because we have read in the Economist and other publications that, but a lot of emerging markets like Brazil, India, China, they perceive that they're adequately represented within the funds, both the US or European institution, which is dominated by Europeans. So these kind of things, also the G20, typically they got a couple of communications with regard to more adequate chief people in emerging market countries. So a very diverse type of work. Obviously, it's very difficult to get trained or to do the right classes. Obviously, it helps to have a private sector background, because most of the things, the financial transactions, are similar to private sector, even though they are different in other aspects. But it's good to know, to understand.
So law firm experience is working a lot from first.
Quite. Frankly, and most of the lawyers IMF has recently hired 4, 5, 6 years of law firm development. We just hired new lawyers who have worked in the law firm. Maybe go to the 4 points, the questions that I have to push forward. I already told you a little bit how I got my job at the IMF. I just simply applied. There are typically these positions are advertised on the extranet. Some positions are only first advertised within the fund, so people only within the fund, I think also the bank can apply. But then there are internship positions as well, and externship positions. We have, for instance, a program with the Georgia University where they send a group of 2 or 3 teachers per semester to us. But we also have a more broader internship program, and anybody can apply. But keep in mind that our legal department is relatively small, in particular compared with many of the agreement lawyers. We have 60, so it's much smaller than the things. There are many less positions than there is in the bank. Also, the work compared to the World Bank is a little bit less diverse, because you mentioned education, health. We don't do all these kind of things. We always defer to the bank on these issues. We mostly do strict central banking, now a lot of debt restructuring, so these kind of issues. If you go back on that, it would be very interesting for us. With the fund, there are no consultancies. So if somebody gets hired between the permanent staff position. Anybody can apply, they advertise on the internet, so that's quite straightforward. Requirements. I think you already alluded a little bit to this question. In the legal department, you need to have a background in either in the central bank or in private practice in order to apply. So you cannot apply right out of law school. So I think that's one of the But most lawyers, I suppose, have already worked in a couple of disciplines. But you need to work a couple of years in order to apply for a position. This is different if you're, I think most of, well, all of you are lawyers, right?
Yes.
Because if you're an economist, the fund hires a lot of macroeconomists right out of their PhDs without any work experience. So that's a really different career path for economists. And of course, in economist organization, out of our, we have 60 lawyers out of 1,200 people, so it's very few lawyers.
You're a minority.
Exactly. Which also gives a little bit of a challenge, because typically, as in a law firm, you deal with other lawyers, or business people who understand law very well. But suddenly you deal with macroeconomists who sometimes have a surprising little knowledge of law or understanding of
law. So you have to explain a lot more everything.
This is quite a challenge sometimes. And the last question was with respect to the bar exam. The fund, in order to get hired, you need to be admitted in one bar. It doesn't need to be in the New York bar, but whatever, it needs to be one bar
in the world, not necessarily in the United States.
But if you come from a country like myself from Austria, where it's very cumbersome to get admitted, the New York bar is much easier. I myself have set for it, and I would recommend to anybody actually. It's just very interesting to learn more about US law. Because at least in my lab, I did a couple of very specific US law courses, corporate and corporate finance, these kind of things, but not the constitutional law contracts. It's interesting because it's very different, obviously, than from continental European lecture.
Thank you. Yes, and we'll get questions at the end. Thank you so much. Let me just, before you start, the people sitting in the back, there are seats over here. Please don't be shy. Just come here and then grab a seat. There's two here, and I think probably over there as well.
Thank you.
Right. So I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, like both speakers did, a little bit about myself. My experience, how I got to where I am, and what I do there, and then talk about how those who are interested can get there too, and in what capacities. So, as Adriana mentioned, I'm a Brazilian lawyer, initially by training. I'm born and raised in Rio, and I got my law degree there and was admitted to the bar there and practiced there for a few years before I came to Washington to get my LLM. I did get my LLM from Georgetown too, like Wolfgang, and was admitted, took the bar exam and was admitted to the New York bar right after the LLM, which I thought was a very, very good experience, enriching, and really intellectually enriching, even if I hadn't worked with New York law and U.S. centered transactions thereafter, which I did. So it was a good experience. I did, right after I graduated and took the bar, I joined Hogan & Hartson, where I worked for over 5 years, as first as a visiting attorney with my student visa for practical training, and then as an associate for about 4 or 5 years. And there I worked with a number of different types of transactions. I worked a little bit on the energy sector, worked on project financing, I worked on international business transactions, some mergers and acquisitions. I was assigned to the Latin American practice group in terms of regional focus, and I was working with the project and international finance group and the energy group in terms of industry focus. So worked on some transportation projects, some straightforward corporate financing, secured and unsecured. So I was lucky enough to get good exposure to a lot of different types of international transactions, including international financing, which is what I'm really into and I really like to do. So after a number of years, having worked in Brazil at a law firm and here in the U.S. at a law firm, I was a mid-level associate at Hogan, and then I started to question, but I don't know, for those of you who might have, those who are LLMs and might have worked at law firms, it's a very challenging work that you do as attorneys representing your clients and going very deep into legal issues. But also for me, I thought getting involved in the bigger picture of the transactions might be interesting too. And I considered like what my options would be. And then I thought it was a good move to go to, and well, I thought also it was a good at the time. Wasn't sure I would take that step later on. I was invited to go to an international nonprofit organization, Conservation International, that focuses on conservation, does financing for sustainable projects near conservation parks and areas internationally. So I went to Conservation International as Associate General Counsel. I was doing international corporate work, a lot of international contracts, and a lot of international financing to these out of a specific investment fund, separate fund that they have to these projects internationally. And I got a chance to work with countries in Asia, Africa, all over South America and Central America. I didn't do much work in the U.S., just a little bit of tax-exempt organization work, but we had outside counsel working for us. And I thought it was a very valid and good experience. But I thought, you know, the more work that I did in international financing and international transactions, the more I felt I wanted to work with development financing, which was really an area that interested me a lot. So when the opportunity came, I saw, well, from time to time, I was checking the IDB, the World Bank, and the multilateral websites. And when I saw a posting, I applied for it. It was actually very shortly after I had joined Conservation International. It was, well, I think it was at the time when I was doing the transition. And I don't know what was going to come of it. I mean, I just applied, like, without any special connections and not really, knowing whether they already had anyone in mind for the position or not, whether, how many people were applying for it. But I applied. It took a long time for them to get back to me, too. I mean, it took a few months, probably. It took a year for them to get back to me. I was invited for some interviews, and I thought they went well, and so I was going to hear back from them soon, and I did it. I called, I think, a few weeks later, or maybe a month later, and I wasn't told anything because the way multilateral organization recruiting works, they don't really tell you that you weren't selected. They only tell you something if you were selected or shortlisted or if you're going to get an offer. So I couldn't really get much information by contacting them. So I basically wrote it off. So I was working, I was very happy with my work at CI. Then a year later, this offer came. They contacted me and said they were ready to make an offer. I was really surprised because I wasn't sure what position they were wanted to make an offer in regards to. And I said, that one a year ago we applied for and interviewed for. Okay, so I spoke with them again, talked a little bit, and then I explored with people there who I never got to meet. What type of work I'd be doing, how it would work, and how the day-to-day life would be. And it was very useful to have these conversations, but my real conclusion is that you really only find out what working for a multilateral is when you start working for a multilateral. Because before, it's sort of like, people come from different experiences, they tell you what their work is, I think maybe comparing with what perspective is from their previous work or from, people see things and they share things with different perspectives. So, I mean, the real learning experience was joining and really getting hands-on doing the job. So in 2007, I decided to join the IDP when I was invited to after 1 year. It was a difficult decision because I thought the work that I was doing was very similar to the work that I would be doing at the IDB. I was doing international financing, and maybe a little broader in the sense that I was doing a lot of corporate works and other types of international contracts and these U.S. tax exemption issues. So I thought, substantively, the work, like the scope of the work is going to be narrower, and geographically, the scope of the work is going to be much narrower, and I'm going to be only doing financing and technical cooperation projects. But I've decided I wouldn't be working at what I realized. I would be working only with environmental and environment-related projects, which I enjoyed, but it was a plus for me. It was really interesting for me to know that I could be working with projects in other sectors, too. So I made the jump, made the transition, and I work as an attorney for the public sector projects, or as we call it, the sovereign guaranteed operations, with the countries of the Southern Cone. So I work with Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, and Uruguay. In the last year and a half, mostly with Brazil, because there have been so many projects. Brazil is now getting lots of, that's one thing that is happening, I think not only at the IDB, but at the World Bank too, and other multilaterals. We're seeing much more subnational borrowing, many more subnational projects. And I work with you know, across sectors. I have projects in the transportation sector. I have environmental projects. I have state modernization, and we don't have judicial reform. Like unlike the World Bank, we don't. As far as I know, we don't work with judicial reform. Like global credit programs, whereby the IDB lends money to central banks or to central bank-like institutions in the borrowing countries, borrowing member countries. And these banks lend out to the on-land, basically, to small and medium-sized, sometimes micro, small and medium-sized enterprises. So the types of projects are really very diverse. The regional scope of my work is much narrower, but I get to work with so many different types of projects and so many different types of professionals too. And I don't work only with my internal clients. They're not only economists, but they're also education experts. They are financial sector experts. They're transportation engineers. There are lots of engineers at the bank, actually. And it's very enriching, really, to learn about these projects, learn about these sectors, the development needs of the countries and the subnational borrowers, and see how not only how the civil service works internationally at the multilateral level, but also how the government service works and how the governments operate, how they make their decisions, what they can agree to, what they can't, in all these projects. So basically, that's the work that I do today. I have this background from private practice and a little bit of nonprofits, but the profile of my colleagues there varies a lot. There are people who joined just a few months ago, more working in the private sector, people who've joined 30 years ago, people who've only worked for the government before they joined, people who've worked only for the private sector. It's really very diverse. And as you may know, in order to work at the multilaterals, I think that's the rule is true for any multilateral, you have to be a citizen of a member country. You don't need to be a citizen of a borrowing member country, but you need to be a citizen of a member country. And that is one of the good things, your professor mentioned, one of these new developments. One new development that the IDB has seen and continues to see over these last few years is the joining of new countries as member countries. So Korea joined recently. I'm not sure what year Korea joined, but China just recently joined, I think late last year or last year, China became a member country. So I think that's a good thing for diversity. It's a good thing for these countries to be a part of the international dialogue, whether they're in a borrowing capacity or not. The IDB works as a credit union where all the borrowers and lenders are, well, borrowers and financiers or shareholders, well, are basically shareholders or are member countries. Another one of these new developments, well, it's interesting for a lawyer, at least in the department, is that we've been seeing more and more local currency borrowing, which is a good sign for the borrowing countries. I mean, if there's a market that allows the bank to lend, or that allows the bank to hedge its position and raise local currency in a sufficient level to lend it in local currency, that's a sign that the financial markets and the currency markets locally are becoming more developed. And it's interesting work for the lawyers who get to work with these rather complex provisions in the loan agreements. So let's see. I don't know how much detail you want to hear about my day-to-day work. Maybe you can ask if you have any questions. Let's see. I could talk a little bit. Well, maybe we can go through the answers, and if you have any questions, I can answer them. I can answer them later instead of giving too much information about what I do. So I've already spoken about how I got my job at the bank. In terms of what the options are for people who want to work there, you can join, much like at the World Bank and at the Fund, as an intern, for which I think any experience, related experience, whether be legal or not, would be appreciated and valued and taken into account, but is not not mandatory or required. And we have several internship programs. I don't think we have as many as the World Bank or similar, but we have a summer internship program, which is advertised online every year. And I think there's information online on the bank's website year-round, including when applications are going to be accepted. It's a young professional internship program, where I think the interns do the rotation, just like they did, and they stay at the bank for a little while longer than the summer interns. And I think there are these ad hoc internship programs. I don't know about all of the other departments, but I can speak for the legal department. We have, right now, interns working part-time with us, and I'm very happy to know that we have an exclusive agreement for to take interns from AU. So every year, I don't know how many exactly, I think maybe the number varies. Six every year, the number doesn't vary.
It's a two in the spring, two in the fall, and two in the summer. And we just advertised recently because they are collecting applications right now. So it's for LLMs, ILSP students mostly, and recent graduates. So if you graduated within like a year ago, you can still apply. And I just advertised, I think for those of you who are in the list, you probably saw my ad. The way to apply is to send me your resume and your cover letter and your director letter to the bank. And applications will be accepted until October 30th, and that's for the spring. So you will be working January to May.
So I hope all of you are going to be interested and are going to apply. So there's that alternative, and there's also, I think the bank has a new internship program for descendants, and it's a minority internship program for Afro descendants and indigenous peoples and descendants of indigenous people. So that's also advertised online.
Let me ask you something. That's a two-year program. Because we have an alumnus. I don't know how many of you know Julio Gitti from the ILSP program. I think Vlad was known from another time.
I remember.
Julio is working there at that program. And Julio is from Honduras, and he's from a tribe called the Garifunas. And he got that internship. It's an internship, but it's a paid position. It's a two-year position that can lead to permanent staff. So that program exists, works, operates, and we have 7 of them there.
So
thank you so much for mentioning that. That's a very important
So I'll be brief. Just to mention, Julia started with the legal department, and he did a rotation. So I think this program is called internship as well, but it's more into a young professional program where you get paid and stay for a long time.
And you get to work in different departments, right? For he was one, always telling me you will change.
Yes, we rotated out of the department. He started with us, and then he went to the social environmental safeguards group. So you really, I don't know what department you do for right now, But you can really get a very broad sense of what working for a multilateral is if you join with any one of these longer-term programs where you're rotating. For the legal department, we hire interns as well, like from AU and not necessarily from AU, but really from AU every year. And these are usually unpaid, as far as I know, unpaid positions. But you get to experience and work with the lawyers and experience what exactly the lawyers do in the day, what types of documents we work on, what type of documents, the local laws and international laws and treatises we look at, and treaties as well that we look at, and get a more hands-on experience. I want to also make the point that I can only speak for the legal department, because that's really what I know the best, how hiring works. But I know that there are lawyers working in many other departments of the IDB. So there are many lawyers working with procurement, for example, and I think they were hiring recently. And there are lawyers working with state reform, with capital markets, financing, and I think social and environmental safeguards as well. So again, legal department may not be the the only, or may not be the first place you may be interested in. There is a lot of possibilities when it comes to the work that a lawyer can do at the IDB in particular. As a research department, too, I don't know if there are any lawyers there, but it's possible. So the internships and the staff positions that are also advertised online on our website, iadb.org, we have these consultancy positions. They're not necessarily advertised, and there's a reason. I don't know what the reason was that they're not advertised.
Oh, tell us, please.
Yeah,
that's nice to know.
they are under the procurement, the applicable procurement rules. They are under the public international competition threshold. So they don't need to be advertised in a number of websites and follow a specifically outlined procurement procedure outlined in our policies. But they can be, these consultants can be hired based on, depending on the amount of the contract, of course, but sometimes and often based on a shortlist. So this shortlist, we draw names from our own database of CVs and the database of CVs that the department gets. And these opportunities, I think they are common, and there are consultants, and this is a very good way to get in, because then people know you know the job, whether you like it or not. You can really learn about what you're doing and be in a good position to apply for a staff position. But they're not that abundant in the legal department. These opportunities don't come up that often. Internships come up much more often on a yearly basis or a seasonal basis. And the requirements really vary from position to position, but for staff, we really want somebody with experience, we want somebody who's admitted to practice in at least one jurisdiction, it doesn't matter which jurisdiction, and you want somebody with experience that is really relevant to the work that they're going to do. There are people who worked with litigation, there are people who worked before they joined the bank, there are people who worked with financing only, there are people from very different backgrounds, as I mentioned before. So it really varies, and our work is so specific and so based on our organization's policies and procedures that nobody really have you worked for either a local government or a company or as a private attorney in private practice has that exact expertise. Everybody has to learn about all these policies and is there good legal thinking and good legal reasoning to apply those skills to their job. Fluency for the IDB, fluency in Spanish is, if not required, I'd say, in practice, really necessary. Really useful. I put it this way, really useful. The Spanish is the working language. Official documents are in Spanish and English. Some of them, the most important ones, like the charter and the charter documents, bylaws, and other important documents, organizational documents, are official in four languages, like all, in addition to English, Spanish, French and Portuguese. But board resolutions and internal committee resolutions and the documents that are submitted to these committees and to the board are only in Spanish and or English. So language it definitely was.
If you want to see if that's true, try to go for lunch there and just, you know, open your ears to what you hear around, and all you hear is Spanish the whole time, right?
Yeah,
in the elevators,
true.
In the lunch hall, everywhere.
It's not saying that there are people there who, don't speak any Spanish. There are, but then they start taking classes, and it's really the people that come there.
Thank you, Teresa. I guess we'll go ahead and open the floor for questions. Anybody like to start?
Hi, my name is Jesse Wang. I'm graduated from ILSP this May, and I have some questions about the degree, and two of you mentioned you have PhD from your home country, and I wonder how does that degree help you in your career path, and is it very common that people in the international organizations have PhD or other advanced degree? Thank you.
In the legal department is not very common. Only a few people have PhDs. You know, it depends on the country, how long it takes. Sometimes it's up to 5-6 years to get a PhD. For the macroeconomics, at least in the fund, unless you have a PhD, they wouldn't even consider you. So you need to have a PhD, but it's only for macroeconomics. For lawyers, it's not.
I would say the same thing. We have a lot of economists around us, and you are considering economics once you have your PhD. So there are a lot of PhDs around us. I don't know that many lawyers that also have a PhD. For me, it has been useful because as my PhD, I since it was focused in the area of comparative law, I got to study a lot of the differences between civil law jurisdictions and common law jurisdictions, and that was very important when I worked in legal and judicial reform. I wouldn't say it's a prerequisite for lawyers.
And Jess is from China, right?
Yes.
So China joining the IDB, I guess people from China and Korea can now apply for the internships as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. And among the member countries, there are, I think, most, if not all, of the Western European countries, and also Israel, Japan, Korea, and China.
The only region is the African countries that are not, right?
That's right.
Because I've had students from Kenya try to apply, and that doesn't work. But all the other ones.
And that they would be eligible for consulting positions either.
Questions? Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your work is like on a daily basis? I mean, do you travel a lot? Do you, you know, when you come in, I mean, how many hours typically you end up working a week?
That was the question. Thank you so much. This was a good question because I was just going to ask for today specifically for the Hogan and Hartson and then the bank. What are the hours like? Do you work less? Is it more? Are you less stressed? The quality of life? Everything.
Certainly
thank
work
you.
Less than I did at in private practice. Certainly work much less. But it's not the cushy, you know, show up when you want to type of job. Some people think. And I don't think any of you would think that because I think you know better, but I had the impression that it was going to be more flexible than it actually is. And the level of work, the number of hours I have to put in varies a lot from time to time, from whether you're in what they call the bunching period, that the period that everybody gets their project ready to go to the board before the year is over, the fiscal year is over. So now between September through November, then everybody is busy. And it varies a lot. Based also on the number of projects that you have. We have so many projects in Brazil right now that I've been constantly swamped. I mean, usually I don't come in on the weekends. Sometimes, I mean, I will if I feel that I could get head start for the week, but I usually don't. And which
but is that hardly ever. Sometimes?
Yeah, it's a completely different work environment. The pressures are completely different. We have our work, the demand is more predictable, so we sort of know where the projects are and in their stage of preparation and approval, so we sort of know what's coming, you know, the type of document that are going to have to review, what type of document. We have some time to work with the borrower's counsel, the public attorneys in the country, to work with whoever you need to work. So the times are not as the deadlines are not as ambitious as in the front. private sector. I think things move in a more, in a calmer pace. Not to say that they move slowly. It's very common to have a question come up to your consultation that you need to respond right away because otherwise you're going to miss the board document distribution deadline and our project is going to be, you know, left for next year. Things like that, especially during this period. But it really, the level of stress is much lower, and you can have a quality of life. I mean, the work that I did before involved a lot of traveling too, so that didn't change much. But working for a multilateral, most people have to prepare to travel. That's one of the things that appear in every single list of requirements for an information, like willingness to travel. And it really varies. At the ICP, the operational professionals, like people really, like the education specialists, the non-lawyers do more traveling than the lawyers. But when I started, I was doing 1 or 2 weeks per month away, which is a lot. And now I'm doing 1 trip to, lately to Brazil, but to the Southern Council, 1 long overnight trip that will last at least a week every 3 months, which is perfectly manageable. It's, if you like to travel, it's great. And it's great.
Sure. I cannot really compare it to private sector. I haven't worked in the private sector here in the U.S. I worked just 2-3 years in the private sector in a law firm in Romania, and I was teaching at the university there, law school and school of economics. But here I have only worked in the bank. So I'm being told that the law firm hours are insane, but I can tell you that my life in the bank has been pretty insane too. So for example, it might not be all the time the same. It might be that in the law firm you don't get a break. I do get a break every now and then. There is also a very good program called Alternative Work Schedule, AWS, and because you get to work 9 hours every day instead of 8, you get every other Friday off. So every 2 weeks I have a Friday off, which again, since I have small kids and I have to go do all sorts of stuff at their school, it's absolutely great. However, when there are deadlines and when you have responsibilities, my life lately, for example, the last 1 month, I have had 14 and 16 hours days. I was cut
That's
home.
What the interns told me, and I was like, no, I think you're exaggerating. Interns are working with her. I was like, no, she can't be giving you that much work. I'm like, no, we have deadlines, we have this.
They're very happy
to be there. It's
been incredible. I mean, I just happens that I'm in charge of a very important project, and we are rushing to deliver this, and we are happy that we were invited at the United Nations Convention Against Corruption State Party meeting in Doha in November. So I get to present the findings of this work. It's a work with the STAR Initiative, Stolen Assets Recovery Initiative, which is a partnership between WellBank and UNODC. And this is a guide for practitioners that we are drafting on asset and income declarations. This is the subject. We have looked at legislation in 87 countries and in practice data from 8 countries. So just to put everything together, it has been absolutely incredible. So for the past year, I have either slept in the office, so to speak, or came home and had a nap from 9 to 11 and then worked until 4 o'clock in the morning. In my early days in the bank as a consultant, the first 4 years, I have worked pretty much every weekend. When I didn't have a weekend working, it was an exception. I didn't have any holiday because I was doing my second PhD at the same time. So my sort of break from the World Bank meant preparing for my exams, finishing up my thesis that I defended back in Romania. So I remember at one point, I think I put together about 5 years that I didn't have any vacation, except a weekend off every now and then, not all the time. So I don't want to scare you, but
too late.
It's not like that everywhere. It depends on where you get to work.
I think I'll actually take down the internship advertisement.
But people work a lot. There is a lot of, and depends again where you work. In the operations, right? We call it when you put the projects together and you have to travel a lot because you have to see your client. You either prepare a project or you do what we call supervision, and you have to travel a lot. When I worked in Africa region, it wasn't very often travel, but it was for a long time. So I traveled 5 weeks to Africa because then you jump from a country to another. You don't get back to DC and then travel again because it's a long way and it costs a lot of money. So 5 weeks, you know, compared in terms of 11 months old, I had, that was how my second son was then, you know, 5 weeks, it was very long and it was very long for me. So in my new position, I get to travel much more often, but for shorter periods of time. So I had about 6 weeks over this summer. I went to 9 countries, but it was on and off. So 2 weeks back to Washington, 1 week, then leaving again, then coming back.
We appreciate them.
But it's also my life in particular is because I was studying at the same time with working. So, I was trying to finish my PhD back home. I was doing my LLM here, and then I continued with my second PhD here, which, by the way, I didn't finish, so I'm sort of a dropout with a career in the bank. it's because, if you just concentrate on working, you would not have this.
I would agree with you. It really depends on where you are, in which organization you work, in which department you work. In our legal department, lawyers don't travel. You didn't used to travel that much. Of course, everything has dramatically changed since the crisis, and our daily work has also dramatically changed. So it has been much more intense. You really work on weekends. And I remember vividly when one day with command 1 hour to the other, somebody, one of my colleagues, if they were from Iceland, the next day somebody go to Latvia, Lithuania. It was really on call, essentially. The missions were spent out very quickly. And then, of course, the more lawyers are out, if you're only in the operations division, only 15 lawyers, if 5 are on mission, only 10, then the world has 135 members. You can imagine how many countries everybody has to cover in order to make sure that everything works smoothly and to draft all the agreements and make sure that. And of course, the pace was also very quick. All these programs, you know, I worked on Mongolia, the program was done in, I think, 2 weeks. You can imagine how hard it is to go to Mongolia and make a report. And so the time difference, so there are lots of challenges. How does you couldn't only make a conference call at 10 p.m. because of the time difference? So these kind of things, you don't really with worldwide membership. And there were, I would say, it really depends, but it's not cushy.
Not as easy as people think from the outside. The outside is always portrayed as a very glamorous job with a lot of benefits and 9 to 5 hours. That's what people say. And then everybody I talk to at those institutions say, no, it's not 9 to 5. We're always very busy. So, and even in the internship level, you feel that, right?
It's typical that you have to obviously check your emails over the weekend to ensure that you don't miss anything because emails get sent back and forth. You're never really fully off You work. Everybody works on this country and only knows very well how to choose like this country. So it's not like there are a couple of people working on the entire country. Only you know certain things. Of course, I hope the crisis is going to be over. The crisis is going to be less. But it's been really, last year has been extremely intense.
That's with a time difference, because we cover right all the world. So. I have, now that I'm in a department that covers all regions, I have to stay up at 12 o'clock to be able to speak to New Delhi. I can get an email from Hong Kong at weird hours, and some video conferences with Africa region also can be tricky. So
So the question I had was sort of a follow-up, because of course, Teresa's from Brazil and works at the IDB, so Latin America is a natural fit there. But for Wolfgang and Alexandra, do you get necessarily assigned to a region that has something to do with your background or language skills, or that's not the norm? What is the, for example, you're mentioning Africa, but you're from Romania. So you don't get assigned, like, the affinity of your background and the region where you're going to work in, does that happen or not?
Well, you don't get assigned. I mean, it's where you find the opportunity, and in the majority of cases, I don't know if you find this to be so in your institution, but you have more opportunities where you understand the background and the culture of that place, and you have those language skills. So I would say the same, like what Teresa was mentioning about Inter-American Development Bank. When I started working for Latin American region, I didn't speak Spanish, but I was the only one not to speak Spanish, and because I had studied a while when I was in law school in Italy, and I had studied, you know, Romanian is a Latin language, so for me it was very easy to understand. Having learned French and Latin and Italian, it was easy, and I just had to pick it up. So within 1 year I started speaking. I was making a million of mistakes, but nobody bothered. And at the end of the fourth year, I couldn't remember any more Italian or French, but I was fluent in Spanish. So it's a requisite. You could not survive if you at least don't try to learn. So the fact that you don't know might necessarily not be an obstacle, but try to put in the same with French, for example, for the Africa region. I was actually concentrating on the Anglophone Africa, but somebody working in the for Francophone countries, it would not be conceivable not to have French. And you have more maybe Africans working in Africa region, more Latin Americans working in Latin region, but it's not a prerequisite.
Let me just say something with two PhDs, an LLM, two kids, and everything going on. If you forgot a little bit of your French, we don't mind that. Congratulations. You're still keeping up with a lot. So you had a question.
Yeah, I have two questions for all of you. So the first question would be
where are you from?
I'm from Moldova, but I studied in Romania. And,
I just wanted to remind
everybody. Yeah. I wanted to. Know what kind of projects do you get in World Bank, in IMF, and all? Can you give an example? Because you know, I would like to find out what does it mean to be involved in project development. Maybe like you know, just briefly mention what does it mean and what type of work it involves. And the second question would be, for those of you who worked in the private sector, do you miss it? Do you miss the type of work? Are you, you know, happy where you are? Because it's in the past.
She asked me every time she comes to the office, like, don't you miss being a lawyer? Don't you want to go back? I'm like, no.
Well, I want to hear it from everybody.
I miss it.
You do? You do? Okay, so you found somebody.
I miss things from each of the places where I worked and each of the things, you know, each of the jobs that I have. I do. It's okay, right? It's fine to, you know, be fond of the, you know, great work experiences that you had. That doesn't mean I want to go back. I mean, I want to go back now. I mean, I want to go back ever. We don't know. But I think the big scheme of things, I feel that I made the right decision. But I missed the work that I did, the types of projects, and just go. Answer your first question. I'm going to give you two or three examples of projects I've done. I've done a global credit program. It's one type of loan that the IDB offers. That's the one I mentioned, where the bank lends money to a central bank, and the central bank creates a credit line or a local development bank, and the local development bank creates a credit line for micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises. So I looked at all the legal aspects involved in that project, whether there were any legal issues under local laws, under bank policies, I worked with a team to prepare the documents that were being submitted to all the committees, and then to take on all the comments that we got, and then I did travel a few times to do the analysis of the project. This is a type of due diligence sorts. not an extensive due diligence like you do in the private sector, but looking at more macro issues in any particular issues that come up. And then the lawyer helps in drafting the contracts. The lawyer leads the negotiation of the contracts. The lawyer does decide that the project means that it's working on the particular. And then just work through, coordinate the signing of the contract, look at the conditions precedent to disbursements and any of the issues that come up during projects, such as loan administration, whenever some legal issue comes up and an amendment needs to be negotiated or signed, I'll be there for the project. For this particular project, the amendments, that's it. And I worked on a lot of transportation projects for state governments, for highways to be rehabilitated, and in some places for bypass to be built along the highways where there were communities that along the highway that use the highway for walking somewhere. And we look at whether there's resettlement and the policies of the bank and such social environment safeguards are met, along with the experts. At two of these sites, the last month. These are two examples.
Maybe to the first question, yeah. We in the IMF, we don't do any projects. We don't only do macroeconomic financing or country as advanced payments need. So we don't do any specific project. We just do very broad strokes. So my work is a little bit different from yours, because also the lending is a little bit odd how we do it, because actually we don't do loans, we do swaps. And it's not actually an agreement, it's a unilateral decision of the funds. It's a little bit odd and out context. We do very specific financing operations, but only to finance the advance payments need. We work essentially in our department. We have a group of countries, everybody gets assigned countries from all over the region, from all over the world, which I like because we work with Africa, Europe, Asia, Americas, everything, which is a good overview and it's very interesting. So it depends really on the countries you work with, whether they need a financing or not. For instance, the country lawyer for the United States, hopefully they don't need financing, but they have other issues. They have financial sector and supervision, these kind of things. So we work in the banking sector. So we work on different areas, not only the financing.
Considering the type of work you do over there, would you say that, I don't know, a background in financing or economy would be very good?
Absolutely. Financing, you need to. Securities would be very helpful, because for instance, the fund, a couple of months ago, valuation notes for the first time. So securities background is very helpful there, because obviously we need to draft these notes. We have never done this before. So everybody needs to study how we can
brush up a little bit.
So we
get
your second question was whether I missed actually, because you have to be aware, if you work in an international organization, you do a little bit of federal law. It's international law. For instance, fund law, we in the legal department, together obviously with the executive board, which is our decision-making board, we create the law, we interpret the law, we write the policies. Of course, they get adopted by the board, but ultimately staff, or we in the legal department have to write these. We get us to interpret these rules, but it's a very peculiar and specific body of law. It's decisions, it's the articles of agreement, of course, the charter and decisions and guidance and guidelines and guidance, those kind of things. But I missed a little bit. I'm familiar with Austrian and US law, which is, you know, very elaborate court decisions, a couple of interactions between courts and interpreters and so forth. It's a little more elaborate, whereas in our case, it's only us and the board who interpret. It's interesting because we're a legislator, we are applying and everything, but it's not as refined, maybe, as it's broad as a party law in a country.
Do I miss what I was doing before? Well, I knew that litigation wasn't for me, so I do not miss that. I miss my teaching experience, and I'm considering combining the work in international organization with potentially doing some teaching. So I missed that, and I would like to do it again. the kind of projects I'm involved with, so or I have been involved with. So in the beginning, as I was mentioning, I did legal and judicial reform projects in Latin America. This is a universe of issues in itself. So to address rule of law issues, there's a big list of subset of areas where one can gain expertise. Issues such as access to justice, transparency, issues such as technology, case management, even judicial infrastructure, building courts of justice, addressing the indigenous issues as related to access to courts, and so on. Then I started expanding my horizon. I did a little bit of decentralization and performance management. I worked with Brazil with a project in Ceará, talking about subnational lending. It was a very interesting, innovative project. It was a swap and an APL, so we called it a swapple. And so it was a public sector umbrella, but performance management, but it had different components. On education, health, environment, and so on. So it was a little bit of, I gained exposure to different other sectors. It was very useful. In Africa region, I was working for a director for regional integration. So we did regional projects, and you know, nothing further away from law. Power pools, trade corridors, you know, we had a project on Lake Victoria and so on. And now I'm back to my first love, governance and anti-corruption. I was doing a project on public investment management, an analytical piece, a report related to EITI agenda. And the project I'm leading, as I said before, is on asset and income declarations as a governance tool.
Thank you, that's interesting.
So we'll take just one more question here, because we have the room only until 1:30. Go ahead.
My question will be quick. We all know that if we get in there, we can do the job. Mm-hmm. But the competition is kind of high now. Mm-hmm. It's pretty tough to get in there. And then if you go close or you talk to anybody working it, they will suggest you that if you have somebody, a reference, that would be so good. That would be helpful. So are we having an authorization to take you down as a reference list or something?
We
need
something
like that.
You're going beyond a little bit the scope of the program. I am really happy to see that you're here. I've known you for many years. My suggestion to you, because I know you speak really good French and he's from Togo originally, Ruxandra needed help with French. We advertised on the listserv that there was an internship to work with Ruxandra. And I think, like we've been saying, you know, during the whole program, I think the best way is really to try to get one of those opportunities and then do the best you can. Okay. I'm answering on their behalf, but like, you know, tell me if you don't agree. I think that the best is really to start as an internship, you know, position would be great because you get to prove yourself and then you get to prove what you're saying, which is you can do the job. And then, of course, if you're really good, people get addicted to you and then they don't let you leave. So, Ruxandra, as like I have the internship announcement in front of me here as my guidance, and the languages she was originally looking for in the fall 2009, which is right now, was French, Portuguese, Chinese, and Croatian, and we did advertise that. So follow up with me later, you know, come to our conference session, and we can talk about all the different internship opportunities that we announced, and I think that that's a really good way to tell me what you think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have recently circulated my colleague Stephanie Trevnet for Public Accountability Mechanism Project. Also,
has that as well. Like a short term consultancy,
yes,
right?
Yeah. We are looking for people all the time, and I can guarantee to you, I've just hired a couple of months ago five people for a couple of months there with us as interns. nobody knew anybody to get that position.
System. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to enforce, because I myself announced so many things. I don't know if you are in my history, but you see what you put out. There's a lot of application opportunities. I just don't see, I don't receive too many applications.
We received 45. I thought it was
that's a good number.
It was a good number. And we looked at all the CVs. I'm going to tell you that probably because of the crisis or so, I got very good CVs. I got CVs that probably otherwise I would have not gotten. I got CVs from attorneys from top 10 law firms that were...
For the internship.
That's I mean, they were working there as interns, or they were working as project attorneys, and when the workload went down, they lost those positions. I have people that are absolutely brilliant. They have been with US DOJ. They have been working outside the country. You know, they have bar memberships and 5 languages, and they're applying for these internship positions. They did not know anybody to kind of put in a good word for them. They applied, I looked at the CVs, and I selected 5 people. They are with us for a while. Maybe 2 of them could stay even longer.
And 3 of them were from the DPL. Okay. That came and applied. I helped with the application. I'm more than happy to help, but I think it's going through the regular channels are the best way. Because we don't really target people and say, hey, can you help me get a job there? We just don't do that, because imagine how many people we would have to be doing that for, right?
And
I'm here to help you apply to that internship.
And to give recommendations, I would have to know the person, and I would have to have worked with the person. I don't want to steal your time to respond to the same question, but since you said everybody here is qualified to do that, you're absolutely right. You're getting top-notch education in this institution. Be very proud of yourself, be very confident. If you are committed to getting a position in an international organization, I would say just persist, persevere. There are many, these are huge organizations. There are so many opportunities. If you really, this is what you want to do, just persevere, and it's going to happen to you. And once you get that internship position, I would urge you to take it very seriously, very seriously. Go beyond the call of duty. Be very flexible, be very eager, you know, show that you are hungry for it. And you would not sleep, that it's not just an internship to put it on your resume. I mean, it comes across and it's being appreciated. And people like to see that, and then people like to give opportunities when that is the case. We all the time look for, you know, the talent out there.
Thank you.
Shafiq, you had a question. Let's do your question. Oh, sorry.
No, I think that's absolutely right.
Thank you. Shafiq, do you want to ask your question, and then we'll wrap up?
Just a specific question to Mr. Wolfgang. I wonder if it was a challenge to join the IMF, having in mind, you know, the opponents that the organization has. I'm from Algeria, and we had a love story with the organization. So I was wondering if it was a challenge to get to this job, to decide to join the IMF.
You think because the IMF has a bad reputation? Or?
Yeah, I wanted to have a better reputation.
But, you know, maybe in the past, I only joined 300 years ago, so I don't know what would have happened in the past, but maybe the IMF was too orthodox in the past or whatever. But I think it has really changed dramatically in the last couple of years. They've really adjusted and tried to address the needs of the membership. We have done things that we wouldn't have done differently. We've really changed our planning instruments to try to address the concerns of the membership. We're really trying, in terms of not only the planning instruments, also in the governance, we're trying to change them. You see these institutions also change, and change. Although it depends on the membership itself, you know, we are only as good as our members are, because they are essentially thriving the whole process, and they determine in the board what happens. Staff, you cannot do that. Or so, but maybe I think very proud to work that it has been very interesting, and you can really do a lot of good by doing the right thing, really helping. I think without the IMF, the crisis would not have been as contained as it could have been. Of course, many factors that would help with the US and the Europeans, a lot of countries, and spend a lot of money. As a tool to contain the crisis. But I think we definitely need the fund.
Thank you.
I am putting here how you can access the announcements, because when I do these panels, I always have an impression that there are people who are missing out on things that we are advertising. So I say we've been recruiting for this position for 6 months, I don't get any resumes, and then I get here, people are really surprised, like, oh, you are announcing something, I don't know about. So there's a system that the school uses, it's a database, it's called CareerLink. And if you have any problems accessing your CareerLink account, every student, every alum has access to this. If you don't have your password or you forgot it, don't be embarrassed. There's no problem. We all forget. So just email us. I'm going to put the email down here in red so everybody can go ahead and contact us in case you have problems accessing that. Okay. Thank you so very much for coming.